Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The controversy in America over language continues, this time over words like transgender and diversity. The Washington Post quoted policy analysts from the Centers for Disease Control who said they'd been given a list of forbidden words by senior CDC officials. That story was published on December 15th in the Post. Then the New York Times cited CDC officials who indicated the list was not a ban on words, but more of a strategy, one designed perhaps to garner Republican budget approval by avoiding certain language. Then CDC Director Brenda Fitzgerald released a statement, well, actually she released a tweet, that assured Americans there are no banned words at the CDC. So what's the kerfuffle all about? We called in one of our favorite language lovers to help us make sense of it. Augustana writer-in-residence Patrick Hicks is with me in the studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Patrick, welcome back.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Also joining us, Jennifer Gubel. She's Associate Professor of Biology at Augustana. Jennifer, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Patrick, let's start with you. It's a pretty dramatic headline, and now there's all kinds of nuances beneath it as we learn more, or we think we learn more, we try to learn more. What did you make of this originally, and how has that sort of assessment evolved since you've heard more of the story?
As it started off as this idea that these words were banned, and if you ban a word, you're essentially banning an idea, and this is problematic in any republic. If you are tamping down free speech, that necessarily means that you're tamping down the ideas as well. So my first reaction was one of frustration. And now I see that the CDC is saying these words are, it's more of a strategy, as you said in your opening comments. And yet that's still troubling that these seven words maybe we shouldn't be talking about. And I get very nervous when people try to control language like that. Now, I understand we control language every day. I mean, the words that I'm using right now are for a public setting. So the manipulation of language is something we do every day. But when it comes down to policy, that's where I think we need to be a lot more cautious.
Let's go ahead and say the words. For those who haven't been following the story, what are the seven, the magnificent seven?
fetus, entitlement, vulnerability, diversity, transgender, evidence-based, and science-based. These are all the words that are certainly being questioned right now as to whether or not they should be in budgetary approval.
Now, I'm going to straight up ask you to speculate, but do you see connections between those words that give you pause? Are they associated with each other in some way?
I certainly see that, that they're related in certain ways, you know, entitlement and vulnerability, this idea of evidence-based and science-based. And my question is, well, why are these raising red flags? I mean, the CDC is known for doing really excellent scientific work. So why is it that they're being challenged not to use these languages? And by controlling their language, they're controlling the thought process and the ideas behind the language. So this is worrying to me when I see something like this happen. Previously, I mean, all presidential administrations do this. They try to control language. I know during, say, the Bush administration, during the Iraq War, we had enhanced interrogation instead of the word torture, strategic withdrawal instead of retreat. We talked about any enemy combatants and insurgents instead of enemy soldiers. So you know, all presidents have done this. All rulers have done this. But what I see here is a little more insidious because it's not trying to control the perception of the idea. It's trying to control the idea.
Jennifer, so much of this use of language, not only with the CDC conversation now, but with other things like global warming versus climate change, so many of these things come under the realm of science and how we define things. Talk about language and science a little bit and the importance of being specific. And then do you agree with Patrick that by signaling out certain words that are problematic, that you're controlling, what are you trying to do by signaling out certain words?
excuse me. I think that when I see that, you know, they're taking out words like evidence-based and science-based, that I think about the people on the other end that are reading these documents, and why would they be afraid of these words? Why would they be afraid of the words evidence-based and science-based? And it must be because they don't trust the process, which is unfortunate, because science is the way that we learn the truth. And the whole point of science and the whole method of science is to eliminate bias. And so, you know, a scientist does an experiment, everybody has a little bit of bias, you know, when they do anything. And when a scientist does an experiment, even they have bias, but then it goes through peer review processes and other scientists tear it apart and try to make it at least, you know, the least biased as possible and get just at the facts. And science is the way that we seek the truth without bias, and it's not perfect, and certainly there's, you know, there's problems with it, but that's how we do it. That is through science. And so when people don't trust science-based research or evidence-based facts, then it comes to mind, you know, what do we trust, and what are the facts that we are going to trust if we can't trust science? So that's the most concerning thing. And then I wonder if scientists are doing a good job then of communicating to the public, and maybe there needs to be more conversations between scientists and the public, because obviously something there that we're not crossing, and that we're not communicating our science well to the public.
One of the things that we deal with in journalism is to be very specific with our language. And one of the things when I saw science-based or evidence-based or even vulnerable, I wondered if they were somewhat saying those are vague. So tell me what a vulnerable population is, instead of using that word, give me the numbers. And that's, instead of saying this is science-based as a shortcut to, you know, it's true and I'm right, show me the evidence. But then you look at how some of those words were meant to be rearranged, and it gets kind of convoluted where they're saying, say something different. Patrick, you want to talk about replacing words with other words?
Sure, and this happens, you know, all the time throughout the course of history. You know, words fall in and out of fashion. I mean, slang is obviously the most obvious example that I can think of, words falling in and out of fashion. And words carry different freight for all of us. And what I mean by that is, you know, if I say the word Vietnam, that means something to me, but surely there's a listener out there who fought in that conflict, and that's going to mean something very different to them. And we have students at Augustana from Vietnam, so I say Vietnam, and they're going to hear it a different way. So words carry different freight for all of us, and words change and come in and out of style. So I'm not so much concerned about how words evolve over time. What I get concerned about is when people are trying to control how words can be used at all. You know, there are certain words that I, as a white male, just should not say, the N-word, for example. And that's a self-censorship that I choose. But what I see here with this conversation around these seven words is a control from above. And that's different from self-control of a word that I choose to use or not use.
Jennifer, how can it affect this was language that was addressed in the context of budget requests. How does the language you use affect scientific funding and policy? What's the potential implication there?
Well, I think that, you know, the budget is going to go to Congress, which is a group of people that are not scientists. And so I think, you know, making it as readable as possible to, you know, a group of non-scientists is important. I think what the CDC is doing is trying to get as much money as possible from the Congress that they're working with. It's a strategy. And so it's unfortunate that pressure has been placed upon them. But I think that they're using this as a strategy to get as much money as possible for what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, hopefully by using the strategy, they'll get enough money that they need to get. But
But how do you ask? So one of the words is fetus. So we look at research into Zika, and that research looks at, you know, the effects on the fetus. What else do you say?
Right.
To talk about Zika research, for example, than if you can't use the word fetus.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming they want to use the word baby, which is, or infant, which is physiologically not the same thing as a fetus. I mean, the physiology of a fetus in a mother's uterus is different than the physiology after the baby is born. You know, the fetus is born and becomes an infant, a neonate. You know, it's a fetus is a developmental stage of a human person. And so, you know, as it develops through the different stages within the uterus. So, you know, I think if they replace fetus, they're going to have to say baby in the womb over and over again instead of the word fetus, you know. So it means the same, you know, it's the same thing.
What about the elimination of the word transgender? Who wants to tackle that? What are the potential implications of just not saying the word transgender?
If you're not allowed to, excuse me, if you're not allowed to say the word, you're not allowed to talk about a group of our fellow citizens in this country. And again, it's a type of silencing. And it's a silencing that is designed to certainly maybe get money for research, but it's a silencing of an entire demographic of people, and not just transgender people. You know, we're talking about the gay, lesbian community in general. I mean, it's a wider circle than just this particular word. So by erasing that word or using some other word, it colors the conversation in a politicized way. And we haven't seen that before. And that's worrying.
We have not seen that before in anything that you've come across?
Well, we see the manipulation of language, but right. But here, you know, it's a manipulation of language that is driven largely by politics, as Jenny rightfully pointed out. If you're not allowed to use, or you're encouraged not to use the word science-based, well, that calls into question the whole role of science in our democracy.
Mm. So the Washington Post reporters continue to do work on this and found other people from, you know, who serve under the Department of Health and Human Services, which is in charge of the CDC. And other words, one, sex education, reframing that as sexual risk avoidance instead of sex education, really dealing straight with abstinence programs instead. So that's an example, Jennifer, I think, where we see a direction toward a policy change. Not only do we not say sex education, but when we say sex avoidance, we talk about the spread of HIV. Now we're in, you know, a country where you're trying to stop the spread of HIV that's spreading rapidly, and you're teaching abstinence only, which there's no scientific basis for, according to reports in the Washington Post. So it does go straight to policy. It goes from control to money to policy pretty quickly, doesn't it?
Excuse me. Yes. Yeah, I think it does. And it's a tough.
It doesn't take much time.
Right. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It happens quickly.
Yes, it does.
Patrick, what about the response to this? Because some people said, well, this is liberal catnip. You know, the liberals just were waiting for this list of words to come out, and so they can get all indignant on Facebook and talk about how we have the freedom to say words like transgender. And is it something that is just sort of bait for people who want to criticize this administration?
Well, I wonder what's driving this this in the first place. You know, where's this coming from? This control and manipulation of language that ultimately is driven towards a political agenda. And that's something that, you know, we should pause and think about. As Jenny pointed out, I mean, science is apolitical. It's about ripping apart experiments and making sure it works. And, you know, we had the great fortune of having Neil deGrasse Tyson, that renowned astrophysicist, speak at Augustana University not that long ago at the Beaux Forum. And he did a wonderful job talking about how science is dispassionate, and we're interested in the facts. And here we're seeing how science is becoming politicized. And if that is the case, and, you know, I suppose you could argue that that's always sort of been there, what's funded, what's not funded. But I see this increasing, not just with these seven words, but with the EPA. We had the March on Science not that long ago. And these are all recent developments, you know, in the last year or two that I had not seen before. you know, certainly while I was growing up, not to this level of sort of undermining science and science-based and evidence-based research.
Do we have a responsibility as citizens then to take a story like this, not only find out the truth about it, whether it's really, you know, whether these words are really banned at the CDC, to get to the bottom of that information, but do we also have a responsibility to speak out against it? What's the role of a scientist, Jennifer?
Yes, I think we do, and I think that I'm going to reiterate it again that scientists and community members need to speak more often and more clearly to each other, and you know, the community has problems that scientists try to solve, and the community, you know, needs to give feedback to scientists, and scientists need to be specific about what they say, and they have to use certain words to be specific and say what they mean. And I think that, you know, there's certain things like CRISPR, for example, which is a great new tool in molecular biology that can easily edit DNA, and we can do it much easier and much more cheaply than we used to be able to do it. But now then we have the question, should we edit DNA in embryos? And that's something that the community needs to talk to scientists about, the scientists need to talk to the community about, and together we need to come up with, you know, strategies to handle those things so that we can trust each other on both sides.
We want to hear what you have to think about this. Give me an email if you're interested, in the moment at sdpb.org. Patrick Hicks and Jennifer Goebbels, both from Augustana University, thanks for being here with us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you.